This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, Whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more five-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain.
As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Michael Sacca.
And I'm Joelle Steiniger. Welcome to part two of our conversation with Lance Wally, the CEO of Chargeify. In this conversation, we talked with him about where Chargeify was in the payment space in 2009 when he got started and how things have really changed since then. Michael, what did you learn from this talk with him?
I think the biggest thing was, even within the payment space, not everyone is their competitor. And it was interesting to kind of hear how he viewed the marketplace, because there's people that he says are farther away. And that means, like, they may be competitors, but they're not the direct competition who I even thought was competing with Chargeify. So once you get into these markets, there's greater segmentation than just payments. And that was something that I kind of took away that I thought was really important. What about you?
I actually thought it was really interesting how he developed this interest in the payment space when he was at Engine Yard, and he knew that this was kind of emerging. He knew there was a better way. So he basically shopped himself around to the 3-4 key players that were getting started in the space and approached it that way, and came in on a really early level with Chargeify when that happened. And I haven't heard anyone say that that's how they got started in something before. So I really enjoyed hearing about that.
Yeah, it's very cool. Well, let's get into it.
Before we get started, we'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors. Hover takes all the hassle and friction out of registering your next domain name. And if you don't believe me, just ask my wife, Carmen.
Hey, babe.
Yeah?
I need a new website.
All right, well, you need to get a domain name.
How do I do that?
Do you have a domain name?
Yes. No.
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 I don't. Okay. I need one.
Just use my Hover account.
What's a Hover?
So Hover, H-O-V-E-R, .com.
Okay.
And just search for whatever domain you want.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
Okay, I can do that.
Go to hover.com, get 10% off your entire first purchase by using the code SOEASY. That's hover.com and the code SOEASY.
CodeShip makes continuous delivery simple and easy. For those of you just getting started, CodeShip has a generous free plan with 5 private projects included and 100 builds per month. Not enough? You get 20% off 3 months just for being a RocketShip listener. Plus, the team over at CodeShip spent the past few months talking to customers and just launched a complete redesign of their app with better usability. Go to CodeShip.com/RocketShip to sign up today.
Customer.io is a modern email platform built for startups. Go to customer.io/rocketship to start sending emails that convert.
And I was shocked. I think I said nothing. Like I thought we were going to sit down and talk about trying to mend things. And instead it was like, he just wanted to meet to say forever goodbye. And since then, like, friendship ended that moment, a couple of Christmas cards, stuff like that, to try and rekindle things, but like to no avail. It is just over. Whereas, like, I have other friendships that, you know, kind of went on similar paths. You know, maybe they got let go after I left or whatever, obviously, which would make a difference, right? He wouldn't blame me if I'd ever been gone. But his other friendships just totally took it differently. And so it came down to, like, sure, they're different people, different personalities. But the one regret I have is that my duty to my friend and my friendship would have been, with this one individual in particular, would have been to just be clearer. He was probably the one I was the least clear with, and we were, again, 90 miles apart. To be clearer from day one that, like, please don't expect that you're going to get special treatment. Like, if this thing grows big and you're working for others, which of course is what happened, like, you will be managed by them. And it's like, and if they decide that you need to go, like, we may hear about it. And yes, if we think they're some sort of out of control crazy person, we might stop them. But barring that, like, they have to be allowed to make their own management decisions. Otherwise, we can't show to the company that, oh, hey, these few people are all protected. He did expect, by the way, I forgot that somewhere in that, you know, after he got let go, he had basically asked to be unfired or rehired. And I said, we can't do that. It's like, I mean, the person who let you go didn't appear to do so for any unreasonable reason. It's like, if we did that, we'd be telling every manager in the company that, like, our friends are special. And then he said something like, well, where I come from, you know, friendship is stronger than business, or blood's thicker than water, whatever phrase he used. And I remember just, I think I had no response. I was just like, I'm sorry. Like, you know, we can be friends, but the business can't run that way.
Yeah. And maybe we just shouldn't work, you know,
and
just stay friends at that point. If that's the kind of attitude.
Fortunately,
yeah.
Like, he expressed that attitude, you know, after he let go. Right.
Right.
I wish I had had, you know, I'll always wonder, like, if I had had a few more coffee meetings with him 6 months earlier, maybe it would have come out in some conversation, and then I could have shut it down and said, hey, I want to stay friends with you. You need to understand this, or maybe we need to find you another job while we can still do so in a friendly manner.
Yeah.
So, and like, if Tom and I had been there with him over a coffee, it would have been cool just to have the other co-founder, you know, and friend of friend to just reiterate, like, hey, dude, you know, just so you know, like, we're not going to protect you. We can still be friends. Like, you know, we can have two parallel thoughts here. We're still friends, but you are an employee of this other person.
Yeah, that's the role that he's taking on at that moment.
Correct.
And those are the hard conversations to have.
Yeah, and so, like I said, I just wish if it ever... I mean, I have some friends at Chargeify. I'm trying to think, though. I guess none of us are... When I think of the team here, there's about 20 people now. Some of us have kind of become friends, but I suppose we didn't really bring in any, like, pre-existing friends. So that's different, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so the overall lesson is, like, I don't think it's wrong to hire friends or even maybe family. Family's probably a little touchier. But I do think that you've got to make sure that the people just fully understand that they're being hired to do a job, you know, with the same criteria as any other team member. and that if, you know, if the company's needs are different as the company grows and or they're eventually working for others, they are working for others. You know, and again, it's like, I guess the overall way to put it is like, if the company's needs change and you don't change with it, I mean, that's kind of a weird way to put it, but I've seen that happen too. You know, it's like you can probably imagine 10 scenarios where the friend's skill set and availability and whatever fit the needs for the first year or two, and those needs may change. It's like, it's kind of a high level way to put it. It could happen to anyone, including me, right? It's like at some point in the company's growth, it needs a different person. So that's, you know, that's kind of my summary of the whole thing. Set the expectations preferably before they even start work. And it probably doesn't hurt to refresh that conversation every so often, every 6 months or whatever it is.
Especially when those big events happen, it sounds like when they have that distance, even just saying, hey, I'm not your boss anymore, could have probably made a huge difference.
Yeah. The weird thing is like, I mean, it would have been obvious. I mean, I, you know, he wasn't reporting to me and hadn't been for a long time, but yeah, I guess he felt that, you know, Tom or I, but mainly me, cause I was his direct friend. He somehow felt that we would step in and undo such a thing. And of course, then he was emotionally very hurt when we didn't.
Right.
And I wish that's too bad, because what I've told people too is like, he was one of my handful of like multi-decade good friends. You don't have that many of them. Like, you know, it's like when you really think of like, how many friends do you have that span a long time that you've, especially formative years, like you meet when you're like early to mid 20s and now you're 40. And so you've grown through, you know, seeing life changes for each other and all that. To lose one of those is a shame, because I don't think most people have more than a handful at that depth. Right. So that's why I think, that's, you know, Engine Yard cost me like one of my handful of close friends. It's not Engine Yard's fault. It's at least partially my fault for not being clearer about it.
This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com.
Well, and I think that's kind of the lesson in all of this, is that it's not necessarily right or wrong to hire or not hire a friend just because they're a friend. But it's like any other relationship, whether it's a family member, a friend, a client, and it comes down to just managing expectations. I think that's the big takeaway from that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky in the other friends that we brought on, like, they just kind of knew that already. We discussed it, but like, again, it also just depends on what their expectations are. You know, in other words, everyone has their own default expectations going in. And I think that in some other cases, we kind of lucked out. Maybe we had mentioned it more often. There was some combination. In that one case, we probably didn't mention it enough, and his default expectations were the most on the other end of the scale, right? So, yeah, it had an explosive outcome. So
you were the CEO of EngineYard during this really kind of pioneering time when Ruby on Rails was up and coming, and you kind of carried it through this period where you were ready to pass the torch on to someone else. And then you went and joined Chargeify as the CEO, and the payment space now is like incredibly fierce. And I'm curious what it was like when you transitioned there and if you faced similar challenges in terms of that pioneering mindset.
Let me think about that. First, I got to process what you said. But it was different. I mean, when I came over to Chargeify, it was late 09. I think for the first several years, this space was not seen as being all that interesting. Definitely did not grow as quickly as EngineYard. EngineYard took off like a rocket. So this space has been like slower, steady growth. And I don't think it's been recognized as something interesting until like this year.
Well, so who were the big players in 09?
Okay. In 09, the only big player was one called Zora. Well, they have some competitors that are at their level and higher. There's Zora and Aria. There's one called Vendisha. But Zora and Aria are kind of the big dogs, so to speak. They've been around for a while, super well-funded. And ironically, like EngineYard was and may still be, for all I know, a customer of Zora. In fact, when I go back to it, you know, we had built a lot of our own recurring billing stuff at EngineYard and did not like the experience. It took a lot more time and effort than anybody thought. It was one of those things where, you know, no matter how many developers you have, you don't have an infinite number of developers. And it's not stuff, the work they're doing needed to be done, but it's not stuff that the customers care about, right? And so when I was, you know, preparing to leave EngineYard, I just remember thinking like, okay, Zora wasn't the experience we wanted. There's good people at Zora, but it's like what we wanted when we went looking in the market originally. We imagined a service that would have come out of someone like 37 Signals. I know they've changed their name, but I can't get used to it. We imagined that it would have come out of someone like 37 Signals or MailChimp or SurveyMonkey, like those entities that at that time were already pretty big, and they made good web apps that were reasonably affordable with a public API, public documentation, public pricing. Like that, in my mind, that's what it should be. It's like, you should be able to go to a website, fully understand the service, pay for it with a credit card, read up on the docs. That was not Zora's an enterprise model. It was all about signing an NDA before you get to look at docs. Oh, and by the way, the pricing's not on the site, and blah, blah, blah. And even when we implemented them, like the alarm bell went off on my head when I, 6 months, 12 months into it, when our finance people weren't happy and our tech people weren't happy. It's kind of like, okay, both sides of the house aren't happy. So boiling that one down, coming out of EngineYard, I just knew that was a space I wanted to be in. I felt that like this is something that some segment of businesses are going to need, and we needed it, right? Some of our customers needed it, and it should be something that, again, it should be what I consider modern. Modern to me means at midnight, I find it, I go to your site, I sign up with a credit card, I'm playing with the account, I'm reading the docs. That's modern. And so at the time, there were some upstarts that were pursuing this modern vision, and Chargeify was one of them. So what I did is I contacted the four upstarts. There was Recurly, Chargeify, Spreedly, and Cheddargetter. There's like four of them. And they're all still out there doing different things, of course. There was a fifth one that was in Canada, but they went in a different direction anyway. But anyhow, so I got on an airplane and just visited each entity for a couple of days a pop. And said, hey, I'm, you know, former CEO of Chargeify, and I want to be in this space, and, you know, you're one of the startups in the space, and I'd like to invest some money and become part of the team. And so I also went in with a very friendly stance, though, saying, I don't, you know, I'm not trying to pressure you into doing anything. I may not join up with anybody. Like, I said, I like this market, and I want to see, like, what the opportunity is for me to be part of it. And so everyone was pretty welcoming to spend a couple of days with me. Chargeify was the one that really impressed me. And I will, let me back up too. Not everybody wanted me. It's not like I was like the king arriving and like, you know, everybody wants me. Because there had to be a role for me to fill and that wasn't already filled. And, you know, I had to like how the vibe I got from them, and they had to like the vibe for me, and they had to think, you know, it would probably help if they thought Engine Yard was something cool, et cetera. So with Chargeify, I went to Boston where Grasshopper is, and I just really liked what I saw. Like, they have a good company, the employees are happy, everything online I read was good, they developed a brand really well, you know, they already had a structure in place for HR and finance and support and all these other things. So I thought, hey, you know, it's like, this is good. They liked me. Their app was hosted at Engine Yard, so they already had kind of an instant rapport because of that. And so, yeah, over a month or two, that was the conversation that was the strong one, and just made sense for me to join them.
So at what point did the payment space go from something that you're kind of describing as like uninteresting or not super competitive to the landscape that it is now?
I can't remember the exact year, but I would say probably the one event that certainly pops into my mind was when Braintree, which had always been proud to be not VC funded, they were on 37 Signals blog that I think is, or some series they write about called, I can't remember it. It's a cool series of words that basically means like small, self-funded and proud. Shoot, I can't pull it out of my head right now. But they did an about face. Like Braintree was one of these poster children in Chicago for, we've done it on our own, took little if any money, we're profitable. And so they, like, you know, all within like a short period, they took VC, they brought in a new CEO, who I'm told was kind of like known for building up and selling companies, et cetera. And of course, later they sold to PayPal. So that was kind of one of the early ones. Stripe certainly, which I think came a little later, but I can't, you know, don't shoot me if I'm wrong. Stripe, obviously, like, we heard about them really early, and then, you know, very early they were super secretive about what they were doing. And like, we would hear stuff that they were working on, they were just going to do like merchant processing. And you know, if that, the sentence being that simple, it was kind of like, well, okay, you and 1,000 other people, like, what's different about it? But they didn't, of course, they didn't want to say what was different about their plans, and rightfully so. But so they came up and did a beautiful thing and made a very elegant solution. Square is another one that's a little further from us, but same kind of thing. Like, let's take payment processing and make it very elegant and simple and beautiful software, and, you know, simple pricing. Like, they're all part of that same thing. Even, I don't even know if Braintree was there or kind of got led there by Square and Stripe, but they're all heading in the same direction. You know, it's like simple pricing, nice website, payment gateway, and merchant account all rolled into one. By the way, like, they weren't, what's interesting is, it's like, we think of them as being first, but the idea of payment gateway and merchant account all rolled into one, and like instant merchant onboarding, I think that was certainly done 10 years earlier by PayPal. And then as I've learned more about this landscape, like, there's companies out there that you've never even heard of, like one called ProPay, which is in Utah. They're now owned by a big payment processor called TSYS. But anyway, ProPay is like, in many ways, they're kind of like Stripe and Square, in that they're like instant onboarding for merchants, you know, simple. I believe they have simple pricing, et cetera. They never did the piece of like beautiful, elegant software, beautiful, elegant API. But the whole part about, like, you know, onboard a merchant quickly, no big underwriting hassle, all just done, like, has been there longer than we all think. It's just that most of us, and I'm including myself in this us, you know, most of us from the tech and software world just don't know that these things have actually existed longer than you think. But what some of the newer companies did was just make it beautiful.
Yeah. So, I mean, things are super competitive right now with all these companies that you just listed off. And I'm curious how you're kind of navigating that and what your goals are in terms of getting your market share. Like, are you kind of just going for a certain piece of the pie, or is there some innovation that's happening that is still kind of up for grabs in that space?
There's nothing left to innovate. No, I'm kidding.
Damn.
It's all done. It's done.
I guess we can go home.
Yeah, just go home. Well, let's see here. That's a big one. We are, I don't consider it magic. I mean, through reasonable pricing, good feature set, support, who cares, word of mouth, like all the stuff you'd expect, right? The neat thing is that we are seen as one of the top providers. and at least by the market that knows us. And what I'm saying is, like, when the phone rings and someone's looking at us versus others, they still see us like right up, in fact, right up against even the likes of Zora, which is, you know, really cool and kind of mind blowing. Zora's way, way, way better funded than we are, and they've been around longer. But the market really kind of looks, or I say the market, I want to be careful, right? Because obviously the people calling us are a segment of the market. But the market that we know about looks at us and Recurly and Zora. Like, those are the ones they see. They also do see, of course, Stripe and Braintree, but they see those differently. And so there's a long tail for all the companies I just mentioned. You know, there's certainly lots of competitors for Stripe and Braintree and competitors for us. But they see us as like one of the short lists you should look at if you have a recurring revenue business and you want to manage it and be well treated. It is true that, for instance, you know, Stripe and Braintree get more of the segment that's like just trying a new idea, developer-centric, et cetera. And they have offerings that are, you know, better in some ways, cheaper, et cetera. But our focus is, you know, we're small, medium business, maybe parts of large businesses, departments of large businesses. But, you know, our idea is that for relatively low pricing, you know, hundreds of dollars a month, a smaller medium business can have a really good system supporting them, you know, running in three data centers with good people watching things, with good people that can answer the phone if you call, et cetera, et cetera. So kind of a business owner who looks at that and says, oh, cool, I get a whole team backing me up, you know, good redundancy, good software, and I get it for about the cost of like one employee's health insurance or something or less. Yeah, it's kind of a no-brainer.
So how do you approach that market where you're kind of the second tier, right? You're dealing with larger companies, but they must have started somewhere and they must have some kind of payment processing in place to get there. So how do you approach that? Because they actually, I assume, need to transition most of the time to you, right?
Well, in most cases, like I'll use News Corp as an example because they came to us a year and a half ago or something. Actually, the News Corp story is really cool because it covers a lot. News Corp Australia, our sprawling entity, they came to us and said, hey, you know, a part of our company in the UK already uses Zora, but, you know, for a case like we're thinking about, we've heard really good things about you, and we'd like to use Chargeify. And they just wanted like simpler, easier, perhaps less expensive, la, 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 la. And so, but at the time, this is like, what, summer 2013, or heck, it might have been spring 2013. And the problem was is that getting a new vendor approved in News Corp is not easy. You know, it's a multi-month process, and we didn't have a number of things in place. Like, we had multi-data center, I think, at that point, but we didn't have, you know, we at that point in time, we didn't have a disaster recovery plan and a business continuity plan and a number of other things. And also, all these big sales usually have really long, you know, 100-question spreadsheets that they'd like you to answer. And they might also want some phone conferences with your network and technology people and their equivalents to make sure that you've designed things well and that you're secure. And in other words, they're doing their diligence, right? So we did like probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 months of diligence work, and it made us a better company. Like, we learned the things that they would need, the companies like them would need, and we got better as a result. So fortunately, we had an internal advocate at News Corp who wanted this to happen and made sure basically that it did, helped us through the process. And so popped out the other end with like a great customer and much more able to work with that kind of sales lead. And so it's a snowball effect, right? It's like we've become more and more used to handling enterprise customers and knowing what their expectations are. So to your thing about like, yes, they already have payment processing somewhere. We hook into most of the major payment processors, and we can add new ones if we need to. We added one for News Corp, for instance. So they didn't have to switch payment processors. They were simply wanting to, you know, develop a new web app that has recurring billing, and they liked Chargeify and wanted to use us for that.
Yeah, that's very cool. And it's a step that a lot of startups, we often tend to start at the bottom, at least I do.
Oh, we did
and,
too.
And kind of work your way up.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right.
And so it's interesting to hear, like, how do you go into a bigger company and what might that
look
like? So,
I mean, probably a key difference is we didn't go into News Corp. Like, they came to us.
Right.
And it's a huge difference, right? It's like if someone's coming to you and you've got that internal advocate who wants to use you, then the job, it was still not easy, but it just wouldn't have happened otherwise. And, you know, we now have like Food Network and there's News Corp and, you know, there's a thing called APN News, which is a series of newspapers in Australia. And we have some in the US. We're kind of seeing a media pattern here, which probably makes sense because once you get one, then the next one trusts you and the next one trusts you and the next one trusts you. So it's getting easier, but it would not, like, I remember thinking back that I don't think we would have gotten News Corp a year earlier, maybe even 6 months, but certainly a year, because, you know, part of their, we got them, but I remember we did a recap with them later and they said that there were several times in the process, you know, where they have to go to some committee and try to get a new vendor approved, where that there'd be committee members that would raise a hand and say, are you sure you want to take a risk on this little company?
Right.
Right. And it's like, okay, well, and so it's this thing about like, they've got to, you know, mitigate the risk and it's a small enough project in News Corp that they're willing to take some risk and blah, blah, blah. So if they had come to us earlier, we might not have had 3 data centers up and running. We now have, you know, staff that runs those servers and knows that stuff really well and knows about security and architecture and all that. Like if those people hadn't been there, it probably wouldn't have been approved. You know, it was just a matter of like, we were in the right spot to even squeak in the door. And they also look at just longevity. They look at like, as we've gotten to these bigger customers, they're like, how long have you been around? Are you profitable? How are you funded? You know, who's behind you? You know, there's all this stuff and it just takes time to get there. And like I said, it just gets better as the clock keeps ticking basically from that respect. Oh, by the way,
yeah, that's great.
Same exact thing in Engine Yard. Same exact thing.
Like, really interesting.
Like, same exact trajectory. Yeah. Like you are trusted by little guys first because they're just like you. They're like small and risk tolerant and any one of you could blow away with one at any moment. And so you're equals. But it's like you, like one thing I've thought is like, if you tried to just use a ton of money to do marketing and outbound sales too early, it's probably just money wasted. Like you're not, your reputation won't be there. Like you'll have all this splashy effort, but the reputation, like that committee will say, sorry, you've only been around for 18 months and this and this and this. It's like, no. So to some degree, you've got to just put in the time and like trust comes with time.
And I think a lot of people don't want to admit how big a role just good timing plays because you want to feel like you have control over your own destiny. But in so many cases, like it is the right place at the right time. And the things you've done leading up to it are important, but it's just timing. So we really appreciate you coming on today, Lance. This was awesome. For our listeners, can you tell us where we can keep up with you online?
Let's see. Well, what is it? Lance Wally on Twitter. Of course, the Chargeify blog. Let's see where else. I used to blog, but I kind of don't really anymore. Lance Wally on WordPress, but they're old blog posts at this point. That's really kind of it. I'm not much on Facebook. Mostly a Twitter person.
Cool. That's great.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast. If you enjoyed it, we have tons of other awesome episodes on our website. Check them out, rocketship.fm.
And while you're there, make sure you sign up for our newsletter, where twice monthly we send out actionable advice for entrepreneurs and exclusive links to AMAs with our guests. That's rocketship.fm. Sign up today.